Turn with me, if you will, to John chapter 12. And I take as my text this morning, within that passage that we read. As I hope you understand, those familiar with my presentation of the gospel, that taking one text, one verse, one line is as a key to endeavor to understand the passage as a whole. But we do, let me turn you to remind you of what Jesus said at verse 32. And I, if I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all peoples, or all, to myself. As I mentioned introducing the reading, the Jewish leaders were seriously worried about the effect that Jesus was having in their community, and it only seemed to be getting worse. The last thing that they wanted was for him to be carrying the crowds along with him, supporting him as God's special deliverer, the Messiah. And that's what that procession into the city looked like in the previous passage. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, the King of Israel, the crowds were singing. And perhaps the Pharisees, as mentioned in verse 19, were especially concerned, perhaps especially suspicious, because it seems that this year the feast was a particularly great one. For various reasons, the combination of events to make this Passover a great feast. And perhaps they suspected it would just be like one of these popular heroes to make a special push at such an event like this. It felt to them that the world, the whole world, was going after him, verse 19. But if the authorities felt that this was a crucial juncture in events and his appearance on the scene, how did Jesus himself consider this to be? What stage did he see this, his life, his work, to be at this point? He accepted the applause of the crowds as he went in on the donkey into Jerusalem. What was going through his mind? And so it is that John tells us, exceptionally, John tells us in just three short verses about some Greeks. Just three short verses, and then they drop out of sight again. At least these men do, these Greeks, the certain Greeks, they specifically drop out of sight, although what they represented doesn't. Jesus himself takes it up as we read on through the passage. What we do find, I think, is that he treats this as the signal that he was waiting for. It tells us in verses 20 to 22 about these Greeks and how they were announced to Jesus. It doesn't tell us that they actually saw him, but they were announced to him. And Jesus answered not the Greeks, but his disciples. And he said in verse 23, the hour has come, the moment, the significant moment. Previous occasions, we read of the story back in chapter 2 where he changed the water into wine and he said, my hour has not yet come. There was a point on the horizon that Jesus was looking towards and he says, now the hour has come. And this was the signal of the Greeks who came to worship at the feast who asked, sir, we wish to see Jesus. And what follows are some remarkable sayings of Jesus, explaining to those who would hear what the intention is, God's intention, along with the Son himself, upheld by the Spirit of God. And looking at this passage, I would ask that we dwell on these three things in particular for a little. First of all, that attraction of Jesus for men, these Greeks who wanted to see Jesus, the attraction of Jesus for men. but also the attraction of death for Jesus. The possibility of glory, honor. And then he talks in verse 24 about a grain of wheat falling into the ground and dying. And then he has lifted up the attraction of the cross. The attraction of Jesus for men, the attraction of death for Jesus, and the attraction of the cross. What is it that was attracting these men to Jesus? What was it about him? The certain Greeks were among those who came up to worship at the feast. This was happening quite a lot at this stage. I think I've mentioned it previously, how the Jews had spread around the known world of the time, and many other people had been interested and come to depend on their faith. They had become part of Judaism, or the Jewish religion, perhaps we should say. They devoted themselves to it, and it would be most likely that that's who these Greeks were. People commonly probably didn't go as tourists very often in those days, so they were coming for the festival. They came to worship at the feast. But they were still distinctive. They were not just in the general mass. It was recognized that they were Greeks, and perhaps just as John was a Galilean and would be recognized by perhaps his clothes, his accent, and so on, so these would be as well. John recognizes when this happens, he recognizes that there is a point to be made, just as Jesus develops it. But his point, because these Greeks drop away so quickly, the point must be the response of Jesus, primarily. So here we have Greeks. They come to Jerusalem to the feast, and Jesus has come in. Perhaps they were amongst the crowd who were crying out. And they were from perhaps a long way away, it seems. Maybe it's like a devoted Anglican from another part of the world, maybe Africa or Asia, and they come to visit in England and they want to see Canterbury Cathedral or something similar to that. On this occasion, the Greeks arrived in Judea, Jerusalem. Perhaps they had seen Jesus. They would have heard the stories if they had seen him on the previous occasion. Maybe they asked, "Who is this?" And they learnt the stories. He has just raised a man, Lazarus, from the dead, from the grave. And so they searched for someone who might get them closer. You visit Canterbury Cathedral if you're that Anglican, and you might say to one of the attendants there, "Is there any chance the Archbishop might be coming through any time? Could I shake his hand?" "We want to see Jesus," they said. I suggest it's at something of that kind of level. They could go home and say, "You never guess who I met in Jerusalem last week." We all do it. You go into the city and you're about your business, and then you realize there's something happening. You look and there's a famous person passing by, and you go home and you say, "Oh, you never guess who I saw today. They were just passing by. I could see them just through the window of the car," or whatever it was. That's what people do. It seems like that's something of what the Greeks were about. And I say that because they say that we wish to see Jesus. Perhaps it's no bad thing in itself. I certainly wish that more people would say it today. And they'd come to some of Jesus' disciples today and say, "David, whoever you are, sir, friend, I want to see Jesus. Take me to Jesus. I just wish that I could take more people and lead them to him as Philip and Andrew did." So they came. We wish to see Jesus. It was in their heart, at least, to see him. But I don't want to move on abruptly as Jesus did. I want just to dwell for a moment on what it was that led them to say this. What did attract them? What does attract people, men, to Jesus even now? It probably was the signs that they had heard of, that Jesus had done. they said, we wish to see him. Not necessarily to want to have time with him to debate some thorny theological point or to sit at his feet as Mary had done and listen. Just to see him. Just to be able, it seems, to be able to say, we saw him. Now, today, it's not that different from then. Often there is something about Jesus, as far as people know him, or know of him, that people do find appealing. The loudest atheist voice in the UK today tells us he likes to sing Christmas carols, songs about Jesus. There were well-known characters who were singing hymns the other day on television. You could see them, and they were singing. And they were singing the words, Great Redeemer. Peter tells us this Great Redeemer redeemed us from the foolish things of our fathers, out of those things, from those things. And these particular characters were still well in them, singing Great Redeemer. Many people find something about Jesus that they're comfortable with if they go just so far. We would see him. I don't know, maybe it is taking it too far, but it would almost appear that they weren't too bothered to listen to him. It was a celebrity occasion. Many people will say, we're happy to see Jesus, when that's what he looks like. Gentle Jesus, meek and mild, he wouldn't make you turn from anything. There are things that men seem to find attractive about Jesus. He is a great teacher, they will tell you. What does this great teacher do? What does he teach? What has he done? With regard to the people today who want this comfortable Jesus, this sensational Jesus, what has he done? We want to see Jesus. We're attracted to him. We want to touch him, perhaps. Want to see him. Be able to advertise the fact. Jesus' response from verse 23 tells us that he is, this is the point where he moves rapidly to his death. Death attracts him in the face of that potential for human glory. We don't hear if those Greeks ever did get to see Jesus, because that doesn't matter. What matters is the way that Jesus uses it. You know, recently there's been a lot of talk about the Olympics next year, the Olympic ticket sales and so on. And there's a lot of preparations going on. You can imagine then July will come, 2012, and there'll be a big opening ceremony and someone will say, let the games begin. Then everyone will have the fireworks and they'll go away and it'll be tomorrow that the first athlete bursts out of the blocks. It's as though all that has come up till now is that preparation. And it's like this is the spark that lights the flame that can only lead to his death on the cross shortly after. This is the signal. This is what Jesus has been working towards. He's been preparing for this all the time. And now he says, we're ready to go. This is the opening ceremony almost. Jesus has entered now. There's no turning back into the most significant work of all. All of those signs, very often the chapters 1 to 12 are called the Book of Signs, seven key signs. And all of those are leading to this pinnacle. And the doors are now burst open. And he moves irresistibly to the cross, to his death. He had been applauded into the city. Now there were some men of the other nations who were interested in him. Does he go out onto the highest steps in the temple and receive the applause? He talks of dying. That's what he's most interested in. That's what he's about. That's his great objective. He tells us in verse 23, the hour has come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Is this for him to go and take over the temple, or the palace of Herod and the temple? It's for him to die. This is his glory. He uses a very simple picture, that bean that you plant, just one bean. You plant it, if you were able to watch it, or if you went to dig it up afterwards, you would find little or no trace of that bean left in the soil. But there's a plant that brings forth hundreds of beans. The bean itself is gone, it's dead. That's what he's saying. A grain of wheat. But if it dies, it produces much grain, much fruit. And then there is the specific application for himself. It is this hour, the hour that has come. In verse 27, my soul is troubled. Never imagine for a moment that this was easy for Jesus. He was a man. He was life itself. He was the light of man. And he was having to die. My soul is troubled. But for this purpose I came to this hour. The hour of his death. The hour was on him. He knew that he was going to be tested to the absolute limit. But even so, he's drawn onwards, onwards. I could not turn back. What should I say? Father, save me from this hour. Read between the lines. I can't say that. It's for this purpose I came to this hour. Therefore, what I must pray, what I must say is, Father, glorify your name. Just do that. Work it through. Take your work to its full end. He couldn't turn back. He himself is drawn on by his own death ahead of him. For this purpose I came to this hour. It's a compulsion, compulsive attraction for him. The explanations are there. It's through this he knows that he will bring forth that fruit by dying. That's a thing that is a great joy for him. In Hebrews 12, we're told that he endured the cross, he despised the shame for the joy that was set before him. And I think it's all portrayed here in its various parts. There's the joy that it was by this that he would bring a people to himself, the people God had given him. And it was by this that he would see the smile on his father's face of pleasure and the glory that it brought to his father. It was glory to himself. The hour that the Son of Man should be glorified. And so, the cross and its attraction. But I say the attraction of the cross because it should not just be for him. It was for him. This was the place of his death. It's in the light of the attraction that Jesus has towards his own death that we should look on the cross. It is ahead still. But we find in the response of the people around him when he speaks in verse 32, we find that they knew he was talking about the cross. In verse 32, if I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw all peoples to myself. And then they asked him. We've heard from the law in verse 34 that the Christ remains forever. And how can you say the Son of Man must be lifted up? They knew it meant his death. It was contradictory to their mind that they had read that Christ remains forever. Others knew he understood that he meant something along these lines when he said that. When I'm lifted up, the man who hangs on the tree comes under the curse of the Lord. Lifted up. The cross, literally, is a gruesome thing. Peter later, or Paul rather later, says it's also a foolish thing. Foolish thing to the people who are rich in the wisdom of the world, called the Greeks. It continues to be, as it was then, a major stumbling block for the Jews. But it was the key of everything for Jesus. Such an attraction, a magnetic attraction, as it were, that he could not resist. Later verses tell us, when he talks about, in answer to that question, who is this Son of Man, when Jesus talks about the light and walk while you have the light, shows that he knew that there were very few who had the necessary perceptiveness about what was going on. But that was not the key to it. It wasn't what men thought of him. Not the Pharisees, not the Greeks, not the disciples, not the general crowd around him, the people. When he knew the time had come, through that message of the Greeks, it was time for him to do all that God had appointed for all. The word peoples is inserted there. To make the English sense, but I will draw all to myself. It was in John's Gospel that we read, God so loved the world. It is in John's Gospel in chapter 15 that we read, greater love has no one that he lay down his life for his friends. This is his glory. He's coming to the cross to give his life, to demonstrate the great love of God. He has reached the point where he could do what would make all the difference, the ultimate difference for all peoples. That's what drew him on. That was his pleasure. The cross was there. He did it for the joy that was set before him. The cross, it was an attraction for Jesus. Yes, it was a painful attraction, but it was an attraction. He knew it was worth it. Friends, you here, every one of you who professes Christ, every one of you who hears the name of Christ, this is for you that he did it. And doesn't it fit so well? And we have it demonstrated again. You show the Lord's death until he comes every time that you eat and drink of the Lord's Supper. He gave his life for you. For all peoples. That's what drew him ever onwards to the cross. And it's because of that that the cross should also be compulsive viewing for you. Not the TV that you just flick the channels because you've got to watch something, but the cross. If you go into a gallery and you find a classic work, a portrait, some face that's been painted, or perhaps a photo, and it's a well-taken photograph, and somebody's looking at you out of that picture. And these galleries, the big rooms, and you walk along, or you walk backwards and you see them, and they're looking at you. You walk to one side, you look back, they're still looking at you. You walk the other side, and they're still watching you. You go up an acute angle, and it's almost as though their eyes are still popping out to look at you. And it starts to grip you when you realize. And you go through to the other gallery and poke your head around the door. Yes, they're still looking at you. Let the cross be that that's got a grip on your eyes and the eyes of your faith and the eyes of your heart and the eyes of your mind. That wherever you go, because you've seen it for what it is, you realize it's got a hold of you. In every situation of life, it's there in your mind's eye, in that clarity. There is one who loved me and gave himself for me. Isn't this cross attractive? That's how it should be for you, because that's how it was for the Lord himself. Even before he suffered on it, when he knew he was going to suffer on it, he still stepped forth on the way. He tells us it is because it was in this that the ruler of this world will be cast out. He was going to destroy the power. But this destroyer of the devil would also draw men to himself. It is always the way with the Lord. Though he punishes and destroys evil, he gives something, an alternative. He took the people of Israel out of Egypt, a desperate situation of slavery and bondage. But he was going to take them into a new land and give them all they needed. Destroy the ruler of this world and draw all peoples to myself. Here, the very Son of God. The attraction of Jesus for men. He's no mere peace merchant. He's no weakling. He's just not a clever man. Not just a great teacher. He's the one who went with all power to destroy the ruler of this world and to cast him out, to say, you have no room here anymore, by going to the cross. That's your hope. Let it be your attraction. There are folk around who object to a God who can allow evil in this world. And yet they will not go the way that he gave, by which the ruler of evil in this world has been cast out. As long as they continue themselves away from God, they're continuing under the leading of the ruler of this world. But his way is already guaranteed to end because of the cross. And all the while that they will take the bits of Jesus they like, the spectacular, the comfortable, to them the attractive. All this while Jesus gave his life to get rid of the ruler, the one that they would follow, for those who will come to him. He works all things together. Indeed, for the good of those who love him. He didn't use the word cross. We know that's a head, but that is what he's talking about when I'm lifted up, possibly crucified. The cross is a difficult thing. We must never make light of it. The cross is a difficult thing, especially for man who uses only his own feelings and reason. But here we learn what it's about. We learn the view of the one who deliberately went to the cross. He went to the cross with the express purpose of bringing down the power of evil and to lift up the people who will receive him. We learn what it's about. We learn what he's about. Why he went and embraced the cross. He did it to draw all peoples to himself. For you, for me. Let's proclaim his death till he comes. I'll do it, he said. My soul is troubled. What will I say? Father, save me, keep me from this. But then he goes on, he says, I will do it. Because then I will rescue sinners of all peoples. The cross is the very deepest thing that men have done. Putting to death the truly sinless one. But it is the only way to the highest things for men. Let the cross attract you. As it did him. Be drawn by the cross, by him who died there. to take sin away. And so far we go this morning. May the Lord bless his word.